we'll get started. We'll start with any announcements.
This is Jane Heinz-Fry, and I would just like to share with the group and get any feedback you have to offer me. I received a letter from Mary Essery Hoyer, who headed up the Climate Science Award Program here in Massachusetts for the last few years. She's a physicist, and she has studied systems dynamics, and so she's very committed to whatever she can do to get climate science education happening in the school systems, and that's the direction that she took. She has, because of family reasons, moved to Iowa. And so the question I have for this group, she, of course, wants to see these climate science award programs continue in the regional and state science fair. But the question to the group is, are any people on this group networked into such groups in their states? And is there any contact person, particularly in Massachusetts, who might take on that responsibility for coordinating, or is there a group that might support those awards?
Well, this is Tamara. I've been involved in judging science fairs just last year, so I could potentially, through the group that I volunteered through, I can see if there's somebody to do that. You sent an email out about this earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I just sent an email. I just received this. I talked to Mary last week, and then I asked her to send me some information, and she wrote up the letter that I forwarded to you, Tamara.
Okay. All right, I'll take a look at that and see if I can at least contact somebody in Massachusetts, but I don't have any connections into the large, if there's a national science fair coordinating group, I actually don't know.
Right. What I was thinking is, I think she found a pretty good leverage point, and I guess her immediate question is, of course, that she would like to see this go on in Massachusetts. And the broader question for the group then is that a good leverage point in other places as well?
Are there others on the call who've been involved with science fairs in various places?
We had one person speak up, but I missed the name. Oh.
Okay. Well, we'll at least see. I'll see if I can make a contact in Massachusetts at least on that, and then we'll explore it in other ways. One,
I think that sounds great.
The other thing that I think that might be worthwhile to go do is these regional networks, the CSET phase ones, or at least they're engaging broader communities. I might email them and see if that might be something that would be of interest. I'll try that too. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other announcements? Well, just to remind everybody on the call, in a couple of weeks, you know, the CSET Phase 1 projects and potentially other regional and thematic networks are putting together proposals for CSET Phase 2, Climate Change Education Partnerships Phase 2. And so we are going to give a presentation on the 31st during this call on the services that the Clean Pathway Project can provide to those different groups. It would be sort of a general overview, which will lead to an entree of more detailed discussions with each specific group. But if you know a phase, I'm going to be sending out emails also to all of these groups. But if you're interested in, it doesn't need to just be for the Phase 2 projects. If you're thinking about developing materials or would like to engage with having it in the Clean Collection and putting it through the review process, It'll also provide you with an overview of what we could provide and help you with in terms of as you might put together a proposal or engage with the projects that you already have funded. So I just wanted to let everybody know that'll be happening in a couple of weeks. Are there any other announcements?
Well, this is Martha, and I'm still looking for anybody that has been working in effects of evidence of climate change in coastal zones, particularly on reefs. But I only have five mm-hmm. more hours, so someone you want me to let me know. Somebody working in reef science.
Okay. Who can you give us? I have some information on that. My brother-in-law has some research on that from Australia. Is that useful to you?
Yeah, sure. That would be good. What's his name? I can just Google him.
Brian Fry. B-R-I-A-N Fry, F-R-Y.
Okay.
And he's in Brisbane. He's at Griffiths University.
Okay.
You know, I saw a fellow speak at the AAAS Climate Literacy Conference a couple of years ago, Simon Donner, is that his name? Yeah, D-O-N-N-E-R. He's at British Columbia. He's doing a lot of research on coral bleaching.
Okay.
And he was a very good communicator. It was a good presentation. He had a blog, I believe, even that sort of...
Another possibility is Jeff Ryan. He leads the CSIP Phase 1 partnership around coastal areas and climate change, and that might be something that he's engaging. I don't know if it is specific, if they have efforts that specifically engage with reefs, but it's a possibility. So Jeff Ryan, and he's going to be giving the talk on this call next week. But if you need it more timely, you could potentially contact him. He's at the University of South Florida.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other announcements? All right, great. So we will now move on to our presentation for today. We have Noah Newman from the Colorado Climate Center. Noah has been involved in informal science education since 2001. He's been working in museums. He's worked with the GLOW program and has moved to Kokoras in 2009 and is the education and social networking coordinator. He's going to talk to us today about the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Kokoras Network, Citizen Science and Climate Literacy, and his slides are on the website. So, Noah, I will turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks a lot, everyone, for having me. I'm really happy to present to you guys. You'll have to slightly forgive me. I'm fresh back from a vacation. I'll make you all slightly jealous. I was helicopter skiing in British Columbia for the last week.
Oh, man.
So, I'm getting back to reality and also getting over a little cold, so bear with me. But I am here to speak today about the Kokoras, the Citizen Science Network, and how we apply to climate literacy. So you all are on the first slide at this point and can see our long name and strange acronym, Kokoras. It sticks with us now, so whether we like it or not. Moving on to slide two explains a bit of our structure, that we are grassroots, we're nonprofit, and we're considered a high-density precipitation network. We take volunteers of all ages and backgrounds, and these volunteers set up a simple rain gauge in their backyard and report their precipitation to our database. Moving on to slide three, I want to point out that we are a network that is strictly precipitation, rain, hail, and snow, and of course a couple of variations of those, but we do not touch on temperature or other weather and climate factors, strictly precipitation. Moving on to slide four, I want to note that one of the main things that we take pride in is, of course, that we train our observers. We ask them to either view slideshows. We've got videos. We've got written documentation. Any way that a volunteer wants to learn how to do this, they can do it through the resources on our website. And I like to point out that it's certainly easy. It is far from rocket science, and anyone can do it. And you can also see on this slide that we use low-cost tools. So the rain gauge itself costs about $30, and you can see the hail pad there is simply a piece of styrofoam with aluminum foil. And to measure snow, we just use a piece of plywood. So very simple, low-cost materials. Slide 5 shows our data entry page, and this is where folks go to log in. They log in, and it defaults right to the data entry page where they can submit the data. Most things are pretty much voluntary on the page, so if you just want to do rain and not snow, you're not required to do anything. Observation notes are also voluntary, so we tell people the more the better, but if you just want to submit one piece of data, that's fine as well. Slide 6 shows how people can then view their data, which is more or less instantaneous once you submit your report. You can view it on the map, either national, by state. You can zoom down to a county, and soon I'll be talking about our new upgraded mapping capabilities that are here and coming soon. You can also download the data in list format as well. So slide 7, why Kokoroz? Well, you can see in the picture on the left, we've probably all seen this, where it's raining, you know, right across the street and not here. And that's one of the points of the program, is rain is so variable that right now weather stations are just too far apart. And as a rainstorm could go right in between, and the weather stations might not even pick them up. So more weather stations make for better data. As we move on to slide 8, you'll see another example of why human observations are always better. You can see the snow that's built up on this church here. A particular satellite product may look down on that pixel and detect a whole lot of snow when we can tell from our eyes that it is just not natural and built up from the roof there. And you can see we're as far as hail, we're also basically one of the only networks out there that collects data on hail. And I'll talk about how storm reports can save lives a little bit too in a minute. So moving on to slide 9 and even slide 10 is a brief history of Kokoroz. And I'll also point out, if you want to see a fun cartoon version of our history and who we are and what we do, you can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kokoroz, and we've got a cute little 4-minute cartoon that'll explain a lot of what I'm saying over the next 4 or 5 slides. So slide 10 talks about how we got started. There was a flood in Fort Collins, Colorado back in 1997, and it basically rained a whole lot in the wrong part of town and wiped out a big chunk of the university. Actually, 5 people died. It was $200 million in damages. And as you go to slide 11, you can see we've got a map showing the distribution of rainfall that occurred over the area. Now, this map took months and months to calculate, basically knocking on people's doors, asking if they had a bucket in their backyard or anything like that that we could use to figure out how much it rained. And you can see here that just in a 5-mile area, there was a difference between 14 and a half inches all the way down to 2 inches. And the official weather station on this map was a lot closer to where they recorded 2 inches. So really, for the most part, folks did not know the amount of rain that was coming down that night with a flood ensuing. So if you move on to slide 12, you can see that we start in 1998, we started with just a few dozen volunteers in northern Colorado. Moving on to slide 13, you can see how we've grown up to 2007, up to 15 states, 2008, 27 states. Now, slide 14, you can see that today we are in all 50 states, and just a couple of few weeks ago, we have gone international, and we started in on Canada. So folks in Manitoba can now sign up for COCORAZ as well, and we'll be adding more provinces as the years go on. Slide 15 shows kind of our big picture goal, that in the end, we want to have one observer every square mile in the urban areas and one observer every 36 square miles in rural areas. And slide 16 shows our website as of yesterday morning, and you can see how we're welcoming Canada. So you can see the banner and the maps. This is just kind of a view of our current home page. Moving on to slide 17. The main focus of our program is to collect and disseminate precipitation data, as I've talked about here. And really, I've already talked about, too, some of the reasons why. But if you look at slide 18 now, we can start to look at some of the benefits of having a high-density network like we do. You can see this is the Denver-Boulder area, and officially, if we did not have any volunteers here, there would be 1, 2, 3, or maybe 5 official stations, which is actually really good for this for this type of area, to have 5 actual official co-op and National Weather Service stations. But here you can see with tens of dozens of reporters that you can really get a nice, accurate picture of where the rain really fell and how much fell where. So without all these volunteers, the gaps in between would be, we wouldn't see this amount of detail. Moving on to slide 19, it's just another quick example. This is the Chicago area. And here I point out that besides just being our own volunteer network, really, we are supplemental to other networks. The National Weather Service will use our data to supplement their data sets. And you can see that with or without our data, you can really see the difference between the two as far as getting a finer picture of what's really going on. Slide 20 is just a fun one talking about snow. And if you move on to slide 21, I'll point out that regarding snow, we measure not only the snow depth, but what's even more important is the water content of the snow. So we train our observers to melt down the amount that is in their gauge, or taking a core sample using their gauge and melting that amount down and reporting the liquid amount, which is very valuable to folks in the National Weather Service and the as well as NORISC, the hydrological remote data center. So moving on to 22, again, just hail. We are the largest repository of hail data in the United States. And really, hail is something that's probably even more on the volunteer level than others. Some people really just only choose to report rain and snow. They maybe don't have a hail pad with them. We still encourage them to submit hail reports when they're receiving it. And we have a few different reports that are that way, real time, and that if you feel you're getting an intense downburst, you can report that, and it'll go right to the National Weather Service office and alert them to potentially alerting the public with a warning. So moving on to slide 23, I'm not going to go over them all, but these are just some of the people that use our data on a daily, if not even hourly, basis, pounding our database, downloading our data, and ingesting it into their products. Okay, so slide 24 is now where it gets into my actual job and what I'm doing here. Our other focus is to provide educational opportunities. This being a citizen science network, we really want to get anyone who is interested in the weather involved. And so we've started out with a new goal of getting a younger, more diverse audience. And really, the no-brainer for that is to start getting rain gauges into schools. And so we've started a K-12 program And again, on our education page, which I've displayed here on the screen, we have another YouTube video that you can go to our YouTube channel and view our recruitment video for schools and see how that goes. We're also now on Facebook and Twitter, trying to reach a younger audience. And you can see the second line that I wrote there. We also now have a goal, instead of not necessarily looking for folks to report their precipitation, but we want volunteers to go to our website, look at the data, and actually start doing their own analysis on the data. So it can be educational even if you're not submitting data. Some people just don't have a good location to put a rain gauge. They might be in an apartment complex or something. So we still want them to be involved as well. Slide 25 is just introducing here what we're talking about, Kokoroz and climate literacy. Slide 26, it goes to the specific, the essential principles of climate sciences. Really where we fit into this is definitely in principle 5, understanding through observations. So as you read through the other principles, we of course can touch on those when we do lesson plans and activities with our network. But this is really the true connection of climate literacy is actually observing and learning through observations. So on slide 27, I've listed a few things that that we feel that volunteers learn, and sometimes rather quickly. The very first one is something that I personally noticed when I started reporting for Kokoroz. I would view a rainstorm out my window, and I'd think, oh my gosh, we are getting a deluge. This is really coming down. I can't wait to see what's in my gauge. And I'd get out there, and there's just like a couple hundredths of an inch. The pavement's wet, there's puddles, but there was barely any rain in my gauge. And over time, I really start to connect the dots as to what I'm viewing through my window, what I'm seeing of a rainstorm versus what's really going to be in the gauge. Folks also are very quickly figure out that their data are very valuable. They see themselves on the map, and they see that there's maybe nothing nearby. And they learn through our daily messages and our newsletters of who uses the data. And they certainly at a point learn that their data are very valuable. And they also learn that even submitting a zero is good data, which we love zeros. And it's sometimes hard to get people to report zeros, but once they get in the habit of it, they quickly learn why their data are so valuable. And this program really gets people looking beyond their own backyard. You report your data, you look on the map, but then suddenly you want to see how much rain Aunt Sally got over in New Mexico or whatever. And so you start cruising around on the map, and you start to piece together more about geography as well as different climate zones across the country. Okay, so next slide, on slide 28, we also are now trying to get more talking about the water cycle. And with that, besides reporting precipitation, we have now introduced a new instrument, the atmometer, the ET gauge, which is measuring evapotranspiration. So we only have to go ahead. Does someone have a question?
That's great.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like that. So this new gauge is slightly more expensive than we would prefer, so it's not going to be widely distributed, but the gauge costs about $200, and just right now we're piloting the effort by getting at least one gauge in each state. And so far, you can see the graph on the left there is actually my personal station from my backyard. And there you can see every day the little red lines are my evapotranspiration and the blue lines were my precipitation and the green is kind of my either deficit or surplus. And you can see over the season I ended up in quite the deficit, which was quite educational to learn. I knew we were dry in Colorado, but I didn't know we were that dry. So.
No, this is Tamara. People generally purchase their own instruments?
Yes, so the rain gauge, again, is only about $30, and we do ask our volunteers to purchase their own equipment. We don't really have the funding to provide gauges to our volunteers, And
but
at times,
do you tell them what to get? I mean, or do you order, have people order it through your site, or so that things are somewhat standardized?
Yeah, good question. We do want everyone to have the same exact style of rain gauge, and so we have links on our website to vendors that sell that type of gauge. We are not in the business of selling gauges, just because being at Colorado State University, we would have overhead, and it's just not the best idea for us to be selling gauges at the same time. So we have vendors that sell them for about $30. And again, this evapotranspiration gauge is more. It's about $200. And so we only have the true diehards involved with that. And we did get a grant to provide one per state for our pilot program here with evapotranspiration. So on to the next slide, 29, I'll point out kind of some of the things that are coming soon. Like I mentioned, we actually have already just implemented a brand new mapping system, but it's kind of just a trial basis, and more is coming soon. But our new maps will be Google Earth or Bing-based maps where you can really drill in, and in case neighbors are overlapping on our old maps. We've also had a lot of people ask for accumulated precipitation maps, which is sometimes difficult because some people don't report every day. And so we would have to tell our database to pick and choose which data is actually a complete data set, and therefore which ones we can display on a accumulated precipitation map. And even more in the future, we have plans for improved quality control. For instance, if I submit my data and I put in that I had 0.50 and I meant 0.05, we're going to have a quality control system set up where through gridded analysis, it might question your data and say, did you really have a half an inch? Because everyone around you didn't have anywhere near that amount. And so between some ingested products that are coming forward that will work with our database, we'll hopefully have improved quality control. Right now, it's just manual. Every day, we've got people looking at our maps, and if there's a problem, they'll go in, and if we've given them the permissions, they can correct those bad data points. and finally, we'll have an ability to compare your current data to long-term data as well. So working towards the end here, slide 30, I just want to point out that we do have several formal collaborations with many different organizations. These are just a few: National Weather Service, state climatologists, et cetera. On to the next slide, 31, we have many, many more informal collaborations and partnerships. I won't list them off, but you can see them on the screen, and many more beyond those that you can see. So as much as that we are nationwide and have these big collaborations, moving on to slide 32, I do want to still point out that we still are grassroots, and everywhere that COCORAZ is, we've got local coordinators that will have hopefully set up picnics and different events to get the people together face-to-face. Slide 33 is towards the very end here. How can you get involved? Well, it's really easy. You sign up on our website. You get one of the rain gauges, the rain gauge that's approved through one of the vendors, and get trained, and you are good to go. So finally, my very last slide, 34, we like to say that we are cuckoo for COCORAZ. Any questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, complaints?
Great presentation. This is Roberta in Kentucky. I had a quick question about schools' involvement. I know from what your website says that you like people to report on a daily basis, so how do you handle that when the schools are out for the summer?
Sure, that's a great question, and it's come up a lot. You know, again, with our volunteer network, we really stress it is volunteer. You only report when you want to. Some people are quite diehard, and we get people emailing us asking if they can go on vacation. But truly, when it comes to schools, we are just asking them to set up a gauge, and even if they do it during their weather unit, which lasts maybe a week or two or a month, if they've participated just for that short period of time, we're going to be pretty happy. Now, we understand they're away on weekends. We have a specific report page called multi-day accumulation. So on Monday, you can submit a multi-day report, which would cover the weekends. Summer times, a lot of schools just totally fall off the map, which is fine. Others actually assign someone in the neighborhood to either come to the school or even set it up in their backyard under a new address and station number. So good questions there, but for the most part, we don't require anything. So any bit that they do, we are happy with.
So can you say, so what percentage of your participants actually provide daily, data, and I'm not counting that if they go away for a week vacation, that's okay, but
sure.
Some that do it actually on a daily basis regularly?
Yeah, we've done some analysis on that, and we actually are quite proud to report that most of our observers report most of the time. Now, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was quite clear that a good percentage of our volunteers have gotten into the habit of reporting at least 25 out of the 30 days of each month. Again, I'm just right off the top of my head, I'm just not remembering the exact percentages, but I know that as a volunteer network, we were all giving each other high fives with the amount of participation that we do get consistently from the bulk of our volunteers. We normally get about 8,000 to 10,000 reports every day. And again, the big majority of those are zeros every day. So it's extremely easy to report a zero. It takes about 5 seconds, but it really helps out the network. So if you'd like, Roberta, I can get you our statistics on that. It's just a website with a graph on it. So
I think that was Tamara that asked.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tamara. Yeah, I'll get you, and you can disseminate that to the group as well if you'd like.
Okay. Right, that would be great.
Any other questions?
Noah, this is Scott Carley here. I'm really curious the educational opportunities. Are there a lot of the volunteers who are actually quite interested in learning certainly more about weather and from our interest, of course, in climate change? Is this a way in which some of the work that many of the other members of the Climate Literacy Network, sort of that their material may, you know, basically have this great audience of very dedicated volunteers doing citizen science? So is that a possibility?
Absolutely. This would be great for anyone that would be involved in the Climate Literacy Network to see how easy it is to participate in this and really kind of how addictive it becomes. It's really fun to, after a snowstorm such as last night, I was sitting in my bed this morning thinking, oh, I can't wait to see how much I have in my gauge. But regarding some opportunities possibly for folks in the network, we have just one of the new things that COCORAZ is doing is we've started a webinar series called Weather Talk, and in which we've invited experts in the weather and climate field to do presentations to our network. So we have webinar capabilities where we basically invite. I think right now we're limited to 100 people, but we're going to open that up to 500. You know, again, our network consists of about 25,000 people on our mailing list, and so when we put out an announcement that we're going to have a webinar, for instance, on lightning, it filled up very quickly, and instantly we were filled to the brim and had to turn people down. So, if folks on this call or in the network would like to present a topic about weather, possibly about climate change, if there's we can look into that. If you want to present to our network, get in touch with me, and I'm happy to look at our schedule and see if we have an opening for a presenter.
Noah, again, Scott here. It sounds like you know, that's one of the main vehicles you have for education is using the webinars. Do you do anything in some of those sort of community events that you're doing that there's sort of an educational component to that? I don't know, some sort of activities or something like that that can also be added in. Are they mostly fun stuff?
Well, they are mostly fun stuff. We've had like miniature golf where we try to get the ball into the rain gauge. But now, honestly, we do have a fun game that we've brought to these events and that I actually bring to schools when I visit schools. It's very similar to the carnival game where you shoot squirt guns at the clown's nose and it blows up a balloon or something. It's like a race. Here I've got a board with two holes, and the kids shoot squirt guns into them that filter into two separate rain gauges. And so after 5 or 10 seconds, I say stop, and I pull up the rain gauges, and the kids have to read how much is in there to see who quote-unquote wins. But in the end, every participant has now read a rain gauge and has learned how to read a rain gauge. And so it's a fun way to force them to learn. And that has been an absolutely excellent tool that we use at water festivals and in classrooms.
Right.
This is Tamara again. When you have people report, do you ask them to report at a certain time of day or a certain time or like after a storm, or is there any guidance on that when people reporting?
Good question. Typically, we ask people to do it at 7 a.m., but we have a large window beyond that, basically a 2.5-hour window. That if you report between 4:30 a.m. and 9:30 a.m., your data will show up on the map. If your observation is outside of that window, we still accept the data, but it does not go on the map. So good question there.
Okay, and that's local time, so wherever they happen to be.
Exactly. 7 a.m. local time is the goal. But, you know, we tell most people just do it first thing in the morning. And a lot of people will actually read their gauge first thing in the morning but won't report until later when they remember. And that's fine, too. As long as you say that I checked my gauge at 7 a.m. and here's what it was, it doesn't matter what time you actually submitted that data. If your observation time was within the window, your data goes on the map.
And then what do you do with the data that if they reported at 10 o'clock, what they read at 10 o'clock at night or whatever?
Right. Then it goes into the database, but it just does not go onto the map. So that way data users who are looking at the map don't get confused by not comparing apples to apples correctly. But anyone who's actually downloading the data from the background in list format, for instance, they would see the time of observation, and it would stick out that was not consistent with the rest of the data.
I see. I also have a question about how you're at Colorado State University. Is that where the main office is?
Right. We are headquartered here at Colorado State University.
And how is that office funded?
Well, we've written grants. One of them is to the NOAA Office of Education, non-formal, informal grant, and the other is a National Science Foundation, informal education as well.
I see.
So we're funded by NOAA and NSF and very little by Colorado State University. They have the roof over our heads.
That's good, though.
Yes, it is. Any further questions? Well, thank you very much, everyone. I encourage you to check out our YouTube channel where you can see a very brief synopsis of who we are, and you can kind of show it to someone else to explain and recruit others, as well as our education one that is more geared towards schools. My email address is noah@cocoraz.org is an easy one, noah@cocoraz.org, and you can see cocoraz.org on the screen or on your PowerPoint.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And you've got a huge network that you kind of built up in, what, about 14 years now or something like that?
Yeah, and it's all thanks to the state climatologist of Colorado. His name's Nolan Duskin, and he's the one who who came up with the idea and was the founder of Kokoroz.
Is he still involved?
He sure is. He's sitting in the office next to me right now. So. And if,
Thank you very much.
And if anyone ever gets a
what's
chance to...
What's his name again?
Nolan Duskin, N-O-L-A-N, Duskin, D-O-E-S-K-E-N. And he is the state climatologist for Colorado. And an all-around excellent guy. If you ever have a chance to meet or listen to him speak, he's very dynamic, really neat guy to listen to.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. This is really exciting.
Good. Well, thank you guys for having me here. I really appreciate it, and I enjoy the attending as many weeks as I'm able to with you guys here, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Noah.
Yeah, thanks, Noah.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Is this the end, then?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Jeff Ryan next week.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you next week. Thank you guys again.
All right. Thank you again. Bye.
Great. Bye now.
Bye.